I'd like to call to order the regular board meeting for the town of Discovery Bay. If everyone could please rise and join Director Porter in the pledge.
In the pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Can I get a roll call, please?
Roll call has been taken, and let the record reflect that all members are present.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I'd like to open for public comment. So this will be any comment from the public that is not on the agenda. Now will be a time to get 3 minutes to address the board. The board will not be able to respond directly, but we absolutely be listening, taking notes, and if there is something we can follow up with, we will do so in the future. Do we have any public comment? Yes, please. Welcome.
Hey guys. Good to see you. I've expressed in the past my frustration with how fast local government works. But today, I was remotely attending the Water Wastewater Committee meeting, and a couple of items on the agenda, and lo and behold, they're on the agenda here as well. Well, streamline, that's great. And I think you should adopt that as the standard operating procedure, right? The committees put them on both agendas, and if it doesn't pass committee, just take it off, you know, the city administration agenda, so that way we can help get things going faster. So that's my observation.
Great, thank you so much. Do we have any other comments from the public? Do we have anyone online? Okay, we did not have a meeting at the beginning of the month, and we are blessed to have our local agencies in, at least some of them here. So I would like to call up Stephen Griswold from the supervisor's office to give us a brief update.
Hello, hello. I almost said good morning, but not good morning, good afternoon. Just a couple quick things. It's been a minute since I've been here. So we've got National Night Out coming up next month, so just wanted to put a quick plug in for folks listening in the community. We're hoping to get a couple big events out here. Discovery Bay, the supervisor, is going to try to make a stop or two out here, as well as all our other communities. So it's the first Tuesday of August, so we're really looking forward to that. For those of you that pay attention to some code enforcement stuff, which I know you all do, Conrad Fromm was our code enforcement officer for East County for many, many years. He has since moved on. He's no longer with the county. So I wanted to let the board know that our new code enforcement officers for East County, for the time being, they're going to be dual-hatting some other areas, but it's Larry Tolson and Riley Cathane. I'm happy to share that contact info with you guys directly. I can send an email around to all of you if you wanted to at least get their names on your radar. The same phone numbers and emails for code enforcement that Conrad would have had will apply to these two. But if you see them out and around, make sure you say hello. We're going to try to get them to all of the MAC and CSD meetings next month, so hopefully they'll pop in here and introduce themselves so you guys know what they look like. But they'll be covering Discovery Bay.
Is there a possibility to get the code enforcement meeting or update meeting that I was participating in back on the calendar again?
Yeah, so we had paused doing those because we weren't getting a lot of participation from a lot of the other communities. After we talked, I did put that out there for our other unincorporateds, and right now we're kind of gauging interest to make sure we get max participation. So I'll keep you updated on that, whether or not we can go back to actually hosting those meetings. But for the board, you're always welcome to reach out to me or to code enforcement directly anytime with things, and we'll get those escalated and kind of addressed on a case-by-case basis. But we're still looking at that. One other thing, it's going to be held in the community of Nyson, but it's open to all county residents, particularly our East County residents. It's a waste tire drop-off event. It's the first one they've had in many years out here. Absolutely no cost. Individuals can bring 9 or less tires with no paperwork of any kind. You just show up. If you've got 9 or less tires, you can drop those for free. If you have more than that, 10 to 20 tires, still free. You're still welcome to bring them. There is a form you have to fill out, though, that's a state requirement. So I'll share this flyer around with you guys as well tomorrow via email. But it's a quick form you fill out for folks that have 10 to 20 tires, but if you've got less than 10, you can show up. That's on August 24th, and it's open from 8 a.m. to noon in Knightsend, and the address is 2030 Knightsend Avenue. And that's an event being put on by our County Environmental Health Department. And then the final thing I have, just real quick, is a note on the harmful alga blooms that we're all incredibly familiar with out here. We did, in one particular spot off of Newport and Kellogg Creek area, we had received word about a week ago that particular area had reached what they call warning level for the harmful alga blooms. And so just wanted to let the town know, you know, as a county, we responded really quickly. We worked with our public works team to get signage put out in the affected areas and then off the kind of adjacent roadways that would lead to that area to let people know. We worked with the town staff, which were super responsive, and we were able to really partner very well to get the messaging out on your guys' end. But just want to put a reminder out for the community that while that particular site's not at a warning level anymore, the majority of the waterways in Discovery Bay have some level of caution just due to the extreme heat we've been having. So we're constantly looking at ways to combat that where we can, but it is a state issue for the most part, so we're fairly limited in what we can do. But that's all I've got for you guys.
Great. Thank you so much.
I just have one comment. I've been dealing with Riley Kahane on a number of issues, extremely responsive. And just to give you an example, I had a townsperson call me about an issue, and I said, you know, you need to, you know, contact this person, blah, blah, blah. And she called me back within 20 minutes and said, he's already come. He's already been here.
That's great.
It's fabulous. Yeah, no,
yeah,
I really appreciate that.
I'm glad to hear that. No, we're really lucky. We've got a good team. He's relatively new to the county, really enthusiastic to be here. Larry's been with the county for a very long time and brings a lot of experience and is his supervisor. So they're a real good team for us in East County, so I'm glad to hear that.
And I'll just mention real quickly, the Lions Club will be doing a free community concert on September 7th, so if Supervisor Burgess wants to come out and meet the residents, that's a good one to come to because it draws a pretty good sizable crowd.
That's going to be a good one.
Appreciate that. Yeah, I'll take it back to it.
I'll send you the flyer.
Please.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
And we also have the Sheriff's Department here, so I'd love to have Lieutenant come up. And thank you, Lieutenant Jackson.
Thank you so much. Good evening. I just wanted to start tonight with a couple of upcoming events to kind of put on your radar, one of which was already briefly mentioned. But the first one is on July 31st. We will be doing a Stuff a Cruiser event in front of CVS, and this is an event where we ask the public to come out to the bin and buy some school supplies or bring school supplies, either way, whatever's more convenient, and those school supplies will be distributed to those less fortunate in East Contra Costa County. So that will be, again, on July 31st from 4 to 6 p.m. Here in the Sandy Cove Shopping Center. The next one I'd like to just expand on is National Night Out. That is coming up on August 6th from 4 to 9 p.m. As Stephen mentioned, this is a great event for us to engage the public. We had a great time last year, and I hope to see some more participants this year so we can add to our route. For those of you listening or who aren't familiar with National Night Out, or in the know, as we often refer to it, we go around to those who have registered and just mingle and hang out and bring swag and just kind of hang out with the public. So that's a fun event. Next, I'd like to go into July's calls for service. We had 310 calls for service, and of those generated 26 police reports, and for June is actually not too bad. Two of those incidents, I'd like to highlight the theft or give an update on theft reports. We only had two last month. One was from CVS, one was from Safeway. The one from Safeway was on June 12th. That was a $70 loss, but I'm happy to report that we were able to stop and conduct an arrest on that one of the driver. And the second one was on June 21st from CVS. They lost about $1,300. Still don't have any leads On June 17th, shortly after noon, we were dispatched to the Safeway Shopping Center for a suspicious subject call. It came out as a male subject that was angrily throwing items out of an SUV. The officers were en route, and we started getting flooded with calls to dispatch into 911. The particular individual became increasingly violent. He started damaging cars as they passed by. He was jumping on hoods of cars, smashing windshields. He began throwing objects around. He was swinging large, heavy objects such as crowbars and pipes. We arrived. We detained him without incident. And as paramedics were rendering aid for some injuries that he sustained for all the damage he incurred, he became violent again. He spit at one of our supervisors. We proceeded to take him to jail and book him into custody. We had six victims on that case. So six different cases stemmed from this one incident, as I mentioned. Sadly, the morning of his preliminary hearing in court, there was a body that was later identified as our suspect that surfaced in the Pittsburgh Marina. The previous Saturday, he had parked at the top of the Antioch Bridge. He was driving a stolen vehicle at the time, and he proceeded to jump off the bridge. So it's definitely a clear indication that mental health is an increasing problem in the community. So that one, unfortunately, had a sad ending, but that did result in a number of those calls for service. So otherwise, a relatively uneventful month. So unless the court has any questions for me, that's all I have for you tonight.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, and being that we had a little bit of an unorthodox public comment here, I wanted to give the public an opportunity. Is there any public comment on any of those reports that we wanted to take? Seeing none, any online? Okay, I will close public comment, and we will move to the consent calendar.
I make a motion to approve consent calendar.
Second.
Sure. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Couto?
Roll call on the consent.
Oh, did you say my name?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I apologize.
Hi.
You did, yes, sorry.
Yes. Director Graham?
We're still done there, so.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hi.
Thank you.
Hi.
And President Callahan.
Hi.
Okay,
all right, did we get everybody?
Yeah,
perfect.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
Just making sure everybody was in there. Okay. Thank you so much. We'll move on to presentations. We have a Violi presentation. Anthony? Welcome, welcome.
Good evening, board. Okay. I'm going to be, it's okay with that. I'm going to be courteous to everybody's time and the quick agenda today. Covering two meetings, so I'm not going to review the details of the presentation. Overall, the water wastewater system has been running pretty smoothly, pretty average, so nothing really to throw out at you. However, the month of June was very eventful for us. We really sponsored the PGA Tour, a pickleball tournament for the country, and had some involvement with that. Y'all be proud to know that I now know what a pickleball is. And now I feel like a real member of Discovery Bay. So another thing that happened from that was our CEO was able to visit Discovery Bay. They came in early June and sat down and met with not only the VOA staff, but county staff. Dean and Aaron were invited, and we absolutely got raves. Our CEO absolutely loved running the remote control grid here.
I'm sorry, so what two agencies came out? These are state agencies?
CRWA, California Rural Water Association, and CWEA. And I can't remember that acronym. California Water, Wastewater, and something agency. Environmental agency.
That's wonderful.
I should know that. I'm sorry. I'll have that by next report. outside of that, we've had a lot of involvement, a lot of positivity. One thing that may be on your minds is, if we're doing so good, why was the plant tried to burn down twice in last week? it does appear that sometime last week, motors probably threw a cigarette off the highway, off the car, going down the road to Leaf Highway. I leave Discovery Bay going towards stopping on Highway 4. You can see the black stain all the way across the burn. Sadly, it caught fire and lit. The Contra Costa County had mowed there right away where the pipeline runs through, but it didn't stop the fire. It burned over with the wind, burned over the flood burn, and it became inches from one of our main MCCs. We saw it early enough in the morning. We got a local fire department that showed up. We kept it off of any critical assets for the plant, so no damage was done to our facility. Fire department put the fire out. It took a pretty good effort, but it did burn from about the headworks area, if you're familiar with the wastewater plant, all the way around to the backside of our solar garage, pretty much with the wind, right? Put it out, didn't have any issues. First thing this morning, we started seeing smoke smoldering from the backside of the solar garage again, indicating that that all of that previous prior burnt grass had ignited, gotten hot again, or rushed and started another fire. So we called the fire department that showed up. They helped us for a little bit, but they weren't equipped with the smoke or the smoldering under the ground. So we were able to work with the town staff and with contractors to use equipment to dig the burn, dig it back, try to turn over that top layer of dirt. And we just hosed off the entire flood burn pretty much all day today. So when folks ask why is the wastewater plant too smoking and smoldering, that's why. So I do encourage people, please, if you're a smoker or if you're riding down the road, don't throw your cigarettes outside. That's exactly what happens. And, you know, if we hadn't caught that, it could have caught those entire farms. It could have went loose. It could have burned down part of the wastewater plant, too. But fortunately, we were there early enough in the morning to see it pretty easily. One other topic I did want to touch on.
Before you skip over that, so is this going to generate then us to look at it and try to evaluate how to prevent something like that happening again?
We always do, no matter how severe or how petty it is, because we've got to protect our assets, we've got to protect the town, we've got to protect the wastewater systems. We are already looking at that, probably working with the town to put some rock on the berms, maybe doing some other things, but for now, we're going to keep them wet. Keep it off of us as much as possible and just, you know, be an eyesight for the town. So if we see, we're worried about erosion now, so if it does start raining, now that all that's been freshly burned, it's real loose. So if it starts raining and flooding on us end of this year like it has been lately, that'll wash our flood burn, our flood protection away. So does that help?
Yeah, I'm pleased when you guys kind of get a game plan, report back, we'd love to hear what your thoughts are.
We're trying to wait until the worst case scenario is the aftermath story, right? So to try to be proactive as possible. The only other thing I did want to let the public know and the board know before we meet again next month, we will be conducting a lead and copper sample. This is our triannual lead and copper sample. We do have to go in, not necessarily go inside. We have to sample the water inside of at least 30 homes in Discovery Bay. Those residents are not picked because they're a favorite or they have a house we like. They're literally strategically picked by us and the state to make sure we properly represent the entire distribution system. And we're trying to catch the worst case water quality inside of their homes that possibly could leach lead and copper. Discovery Bay does not have a history of lead and copper problems at all, which is why we're under reduced monitoring. But it is, you know, you're going to get questions, why are we sampling water, what's going on, it's just routine. So that's our problem. Other than that, that's all I've got, unless you have any questions about the presentation.
Any further questions?
Not for me. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
No, I do have a question. So over a week or so in the last week, a few few people reached out to me, and then I saw a number of postings on the water smelling at the Centex homes in that area. And Dina shared with me that that y'all flush the fire hydrants, and a lot of times it's from water sitting in pipes. So so y'all went over and checked it, and there's no ongoing issues?
That's correct. So what generally happens, we got some calls as well. One of the messages was that my water smells like fertilizer, right? Things like that.
Same person.
So as always, it doesn't matter what we get. If it's anything even hinting towards water quality, we respond. We can't respond to the houses. We can't go on people's property, things like that. But we do respond to wherever that address is, to the nearest hydrant, and then several around it. We test the quality on the system because it's our priority to make sure that if there could be a problem, that we find out where it is and how bad. So if it's worst case scenario, an actual contamination, we can let the town know and let the public know as soon as possible. In that situation, we could not mimic the problem in the mains. I did let Dina know and town staff know that we do have a groundwater well that is susceptible to pulling up what we call hydrogen sulfide, H2S. When it first comes on in the first cycles, we do flush it. It's automatic, but sometimes it produces enough H2S to get by the filters. It's not harmful to human health. It's not harmful to consumption, but it smells like rotten eggs. That's literally what it smells like. So who wants that? The best way to do it is run your water. If it's gotten trapped in your hot water, things like that, hot water makes it smell worse. So if you ever get that in the house, you need to flush the hot water heater, run it. Always call us. If you're flushing inside, we'll flush the mains and make absolutely sure that you get fresh water inside your house. But a lot of times, if we flush the mains and you don't flush water inside your house, it's not doing you any good yet. So you got to put that fresh water inside. So that's just notice. But let us know if we respond and try to fix whatever we can.
Wonderful. Thank you all.
You also have those sampling stations. Are those different than what you're talking about as far as just...
So those stations are specific to the bacteriological site sampling plant. They're specific for total culture. So that's the ones on the reports you see every month or technically every week. We collect so many samples all over the system, and they have to be at those stations. Total culture is very picky about if you breathe or sneeze or anything like that, you can false represent and fail the sample. So they have to be taken at very clean, pristine spots where you don't have, bird feces, things like that contaminated. Lead and copper is about we're trying to see if there's any way that old water staying inside of your house plumbing is leaching lead or copper. The good thing for Discovery Bay is the large portion of the town was built much later than the lead ban in California, so we don't have that problem. But we do still watch for copper and things like that, just in case somebody may have put a lead-based meter in or something internal to their plumbing. We're not responsible for the internal plumbing, but we do want to make sure they get the water. If for any reason they hit action level, we are required by the state to at least notify them and say, hey, we're seeing lead or a copper problem inside their home.
Thank you.
That's great.
Great. Thank you so much. Okay, let's move to E1, discussion possible action item, possible feedback regarding the Discovery Bay Recreation and Sports Pickleball proposal for court conversion. Hello, Monica.
Hi. So I won't bore you and read this whole thing, but I'm just going to kind of give a recap to refresh everybody's memory of the discussion at hand. So in April 2022, the Parks and Recreation Committee meeting, at the request of Discovery Bay Recreation and Sports, requested the town take two of the tennis courts here and paint permanent dual lines to make them dual use bring it to the park and recreation meeting. At that time, it was discussed reaching back out, getting some more answers, questions to some answers, which we did. We reached out to USTA, didn't show up to the meeting. However, since then, then we had another meeting May 1st, I apologize, I'm all over the place here tonight. Since May 1st, Discovery Bay Recreation and Sports has submitted a new proposal letter, which is attached. But in summary, what they'd like to do is not do the dual-use lines and take tennis court 1 and 2 and turn those into permanent pickleball courts, which would give 6 more courts, which would then leave the town as a whole with the community center having 12 pickleball courts, 4 tennis courts, and Cornell Park would have 2 pickleball courts and 1 tennis court. So what we kind of discussed and the thought was is that if we have those back 4 tennis courts would be dedicated to tennis, we did discuss with the group, with Discovery Bay Recreation and Sports, the idea of, we've got really large, old metal bleachers back there. So the idea was removing those, which Discovery Bay Recreation and Sports has agreed to do at their cost. Then that what the town would do is turn that whole concrete area into a nice sitting area for when we have our youth lessons. Parents can sit there, some shades, some tables, things like that. So we kind of have a dedicated back section for tennis, and then of course our current pickleball courts, and then the front 2 tennis turning into more pickleball. Sorry, that was a really confusing stuff report for some reason tonight. It's kind of been all over the place. I'm happy to answer any questions if I confused you.
Do we have any questions from the board?
Has the Parks and Rec Committee reviewed this? And
yes, they have.
Okay.
And do they have a recommendation?
We do have a recommendation, but if possible, can we open this up to public comments and hear from the pickleball folks? Then go from there.
Okay, let me add, we would also make sure that we have put together conditions of approval. Dean and I would work very closely with the group to make sure that everything is in line and following everything that we would need to do accordingly with going out, getting pricing, conditions of approval.
So the reason why we chose to do a tennis in the back and pickleball in the front is that so they're all aligned. So when the pickleball group comes and they want to have a tournament, everything's in a nice line. It's not courts 3, 4, 5, and 6, and then right behind is another set of courts. So we thought that this would be a nice way to do that. The one holdup is that we used to use tennis courts 1 and 2 for youth lessons and things like that. So when we approached the pickleball group, you know, they really wanted courts 1 and 2 to keep that alignment, to keep the tennis alignment, and we kind of suggested, well, if we could remove those bleachers and make that nice area a nice sitting area for parents or for the tennis, or even for when they have a tournament of football tennis, extra seating, that would be a nice kind of offset to giving them the courts 1 and 2. So I think it's a nice alignment. You know, if they do put their money where their mouth is,
and the tennis people are.
They have not responded.
You haven't gotten any response.
They were invited to the Parks and Rec Committee meeting.
Okay.
They did not respond. We reached out to them again. No response. So they have not shown or given an opinion.
Okay.
So we're moving forward.
Is there? There's not an existing. Well, go ahead.
Okay. I'd like to give opportunity for a public comment on this topic. Do we have anyone in the audience that would like to make a public comment?
Yeah, I have a couple of bullet points I just wanted to mention.
Sure.
It'll be quick. You know, I think everybody's heard the increased popularity of pickleball. That's the whole purpose of this. I looked it up on the internet, 158% national growth between 20 and 22. I believe in this area because you can play year-round is probably greater than that. existing tennis courts. The tennis courts are currently, in my opinion, underutilized compared to the demand for the pickleball courts. The benefit to the community, having more pickleball courts will increase recreational opportunities for residents of all ages and abilities. This could also potentially attract more pickleball tournaments or events in Discovery Bay, benefiting the local businesses. On average, our tournaments are going to bring right around 250 people to our tournaments. A 6 tennis court, and I don't know if you've ever had tennis tournaments here, but a 6 court tennis tournament would bring about 36. So 36 people is a typical tennis tournament on 6 courts. The cost efficiency, it will be easier to convert the existing 2 courts to 6 pickleball courts, 1 and 2, versus building those courts in a separate location. Plus, the pickleball may be able to pay the majority of the cost, if not all of the expenses. We'll go through it. As Monica said, we'll work on those details if we get the support. The support from the pickleball community, I think you guys all know that, and I told them all to not come to this meeting. So to give you guys a break. Maintaining tennis opportunities, despite reducing the number of tennis courts, we believe there'll still be adequate facilities for tennis players with the 4 courts. Long-term planning, the conversion to tennis courts should align with the long-term vision of recreation facilities at the Community Center in Discovery Bay, and also align with future needs and trends of this active community. The bottom line is just a lot easier to play pickleball. It's easier on the body. People can pick it up and play a lot easier than they can start playing tennis. Environmental concerns. This proposal will benefit the environment with very little impact by using existing infrastructure rather than developing new land. And then the funding and maintenance of the Discovery Bay Pickleball Club will get bids with the guidance of the town to see what the project would cost and how it would initially be funded. But we are definitely willing to step up and get more. And then if we're short any money, we'll do fundraisers to get it done.
Chris, how large is your group now? How many members do you guys have?
Approximately 200 dues paying members, but I would say another 2 or 3 times that actually
are participating. Do you have a forecast of where you see a year from now? I mean, what kind of run rate or what kind of join rate are you guys seeing? Are you getting
right
new members
very
every week?
Passive on the joining. Mm-hmm. It's a total voluntary. I do believe that once word gets out that we're building this facility, more people will be more inclined to pay the dues and belong to the club. I could see easily within a year or 2 1,000 people. Hmm. Our mailing list is
1,600.
So. Very sizable. If we were to move forward with this, you know, what would be the next evolution in your guys' minds that you'd like to see take place out there?
Well, I think the next step is just to get a bid on it.
Well, as far as let's moving past that, if the board decides to move forward, you know, 6 months, a year from now, what would be the next thing you'd like to see? Would it be lighting? Would it be some type of, I'm just trying to.
Yeah, actually that's a good question. Lighting, definitely, and then possibly on maybe a port or 2 or 3, overhead protection from either sun and rain and elements of the weather.
And, sorry, what was your name?
Chris Sullivan.
Chris Sullivan, thank you.
He's the president of our club.
Oh, excellent, okay.
I guess there's no lob shot in pickleball, huh? So covering's okay?
Well, there is a lob shot, but I hate lobs. That's why covering would be very
self-serving, huh? I see how you are.
So if you guys, I don't know if you guys have
well, I've been looking at
aerial
that.
Vision. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Aerial vision kind of shows a before and after, mm-hmm. so that gives you a good picture of what it would look like.
So in regard to your lob comment, a tennis ball goes a lot higher than a pickleball. We don't need a big
seat. Okay. Just
yeah.
As an ex-tennis player that is too old to play tennis anymore, I know about tennis more than I do pickleball.
You're never too old for pickleball.
And I've heard that.
Thank you very much.
All right. Everybody's getting knee replacements.
Do we have anybody else in public that wants to make a comment? Anyone online? Oh, sorry. We have one more comment.
Mm-hmm.
big solar panel array.
Thank you.
I'm a little bit confused though, because so USTA requires 6 quarts minimum. So we're basically ruling out USTA treatments and that kind of stuff. I don't know if there was any revenue associated with that or they're renting this. I don't know. But just throwing that out.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Since you brought up the 6 quarts for a 10-step tournament, I've lived here 15 years. I haven't seen a tournament happen yet. So just.
Thank you. All right, with that, I'll close public comment. Monica, if you wouldn't mind. Monica, we had an open question out to USTA about the tournaments, and we didn't get a response, but we had asked you to do some research on when the last tournament was, and I believe you did that, or am I mistaken?
When the last tournament? I think there's a Mix on Birds tournament.
Sure, no, understood.
With all of us, I think what they refer to as a tournament and bringing in revenue is different than, yes, we have leagues that rent our courts that brings in revenue. There are USTA leagues that rent our courts through the entire season. And they need 4 courts. We've always left, you know, 2 open for drop-in play, but we can certainly change the footprint of how that works.
Okay, so what you're saying, just to be perfectly clear, is converting the 2 courts will not preclude us from that same revenue stream that we were receiving before.
Not based on what we've been doing with them renting for their league matches.
Okay, perfect. That was the answer to my question.
Yeah, you got it.
So, if I might.
Absolutely.
That was where I was going to go before we opened it up, was do we have a regular tennis club that meets here?
Or is it, school,
is it, I'm sorry?
The high school students practice here.
Okay.
After school time during their season. Not through us. They come and use the courts because a lot of them don't drive.
Sure.
So for extra practice, they come here.
Okay.
If we do this, just for full transparency, right, we want to make sure we make the best decision. That would mean when the 4 back tennis courts are being rented, there would be no drop-in, non-paying play for residents that just want to come play tennis, or they can go to Cornell Park, because we do have those courts now that are beautiful and resurfaced.
How consistent are the rental of the tennis courts? I mean, is it every weekend? Is it 2 nights a week? Is it, do we know?
It's usually
Or is
weekends.
It inconsistent?
You know, it's inconsistent because it's based on whatever their season is. Bob is a tennis player. What's the tennis season?
I play tennis, but I'm not a tennis player.
and so,
I don't play in any leagues or anything
okay.
like that, so I don't know exactly what it
months
is.
And months. I would say probably 6 months out of the year they're renting our courts because they do their season. They use this as their home base, and then they have people from Danville and every place else come and play here. So that brings all of those folks here playing tennis. They need the 4 courts, and it's usually most of the day Saturday and Sunday. Then if they make it into their finals, then their season extends. If they don't,
but it's not every weekend. If they're hosting the other weekends, they're traveling to another set of courts to play too. Is that
correct?
But
there's several teams.
Okay.
And that, to clarify, that's not a local group, right? They're from Mountain House?
They live in Mountain House and some live in Discovery.
Okay. It's club. If it,
Bob?
Yeah.
Sorry. Back on track. We reached out to, we know who the organizers of these clubs are because they contact you to reserve the courts, correct?
Correct.
And we've reached out to them and received no response back from them. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
I personally reached out to them.
As long as we've reached out but have received no response back,
that is correct.
That
That was my question. I'm good. Would you like to hear from the Park and Rec Committee?
If you're ready.
Yes, I'm ready.
Go.
This was discussed extensively over the past several months and multiple meetings and multiple times. I know what I see, and what I see is the usage that's taking place at the with the pickleball folks and how many people are out there. I think this is a great opportunity for our community center to actually become a premier destination for pickleball folks. And with the financial contribution of them, it's a no-brainer to me. I mean, we're on a path there. We have very limited resources, and by converting those two, and eventually, if we're able to do the solar, and eventually have lighting and some other things, the community center could really take off and become a great destination. So, and at the end of the day, nothing isn't irreversible. So, if we find all of a sudden, wow, we screwed up, and we got tennis people coming out of the woodworks here that we never anticipated, well, we could revisit this, quite easily. So I'll let Director Cowan speak for himself, but I'm definitely in support, and I think this is a good idea for the community center.
Yeah.
If you're on that committee, do you generally agree with that?
I agree with that, Steve.
Okay.
Yep.
Good enough for me?
Yep, and the lack of response from any opposing view made it really difficult to not be on board.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And well, we still have the four courts, so nothing really changes.
Okay. Any other discussion from the board?
No.
Okay. Thank you so much, Monica. We'll now take a motion.
I'll make a motion that we approve converting the two courts over.
Is that what we're doing here? I'm sorry, legal?
Yes, your staff recommendation indicates that you are...
Because it was discussion and possible feedback.
Well, you're under the discussion of possible action agenda item. So
okay.
You do have the authority to take action.
Okay.
The discussion and feedback was what you engaged in here, but the staff's recommendation is to approve the conversion of tennis courts 1 and 2 into 6 pickleball courts financed by the DDRS. So that's the Green Bay Recreation and Sports.
Okay.
I'll make my motion to move forward with staff recommendation.
Okay. Excellent. So I have a motion.
I have a second.
Great, we have a motion and a second. Can we please have a roll call vote?
Yes. Director Porter?
Aye.
Director Gattone?
Aye.
Director Graves?
Aye.
Vice President Graham?
Aye.
President Callahan?
Aye. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
appreciate all the hard work, Monica, as well. It was a lot. I know it was a lot.
Sorry for the fumble there.
No. Perfect. We got there. We got there. Okay. Let's move to item number 2. Discussion of possible action regarding the demolition of well. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Well number 5A and associated small structures. Approving the resolution, adopting CEQA exemption, approving the project, and directing the filing of notice of exemption. And I believe we have Mike Rocca. We see your hand raised, Mike. Do we hear you?
Can you hear me?
Yes. We can hear you. Oh, this is awesome.
Okay, great. I'll put my hand down. Yes, thank you very much. We have, I believe the board is aware that the water quality is rated over time, and we've done a lot of studying on this, and it was decided that we should take 5A out of service and demolish the well and remove the associated pump building and other structures on the site. And so part of the process is we have to comply with CEQA, and these activities of removing small structures are exempt under CEQA, so there's an actual categorical exemption under CEQA for this. Before you is the resolution 2024-13, which approves a project and adopts the CEQA notice of exemption, which is included in your board packet. And so the action before you tonight is to adopt the resolution and then authorize staff to file the notice of exemption with the county clerk's office. We are actually out to bid on the project now, so we do want to get this filed as soon as possible.
Okay. Okay, any questions on the board?
I just have a question. Why does, how could the, how could well five affect the rest of the water? I don't know. Is it?
So we, our aquifer, the aquifers are somewhat connected. I say somewhat because we have a lot of information about the hydrogeology underground, where the gravel layers are, where the sand layers are. And so we can see that there is connectivity between each of our wells. So if one well becomes contaminated, and then you can imagine if we're drawing water out of an adjacent well, we're now sucking that contaminated water over to the other well that we're using for potable water. So that's the concern, is that because of all of the connectivity on the ground, we're concerned about contamination of the other well.
Got it. Thank you.
This was brought to water and wastewater, and basically it's procedure that needs to happen in order for us to move forward and do what we need to do with 4-5.
Great. You concur?
Absolutely. It's really it's a just an administrative issue.
Awesome.
It's something that the reason we're building well 8 is because we know well 5 is shutting down, and this is not the first well in town we've shut down. We've shut down 2A over there also, and it just happens.
Perfect.
Casings collapse, different reasons, this particular one. And Brian, to your question, you know, all the water from the wells get pumped to one distribution center. And so one well can contaminate the other wells because when they reach Newport processing, they've now been blended. Okay. Is that right?
So, okay, so the issue with the well contamination is we have different level aquifers. Right now we're pulling water from a 300-foot aquifer. The casing we believe in that well 5 has failed, allowing from the upper aquifer, which has poor quality water, to leach into that lower aquifer with the good water. So when we pull water from other wells out of that good aquifer, we're relieving the pressure of that lower aquifer, drawing water from the higher aquifer drained into the lower aquifer, kind of like a milkshake. It melts up top first, and you're drinking, and all of a sudden you see a funnel all the way down in the straw. That's what's happening with our aquifers, people.
And this is the well that's close to the storage units, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for that clarification and the milkshake analogy.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. Okay, so with that, let me get some, any public comment on the topic? Any online? Great. Okay, close public comment and come back to the board for a possible motion.
And make a motion to follow staff's recommendation.
Second.
Can I get a roll call vote, please?
Yes. Director Porter.
Aye.
Director Coteau.
Aye.
Director Briggs.
Aye.
Vice President Graham.
Aye.
President Calhoun.
Aye. Thank you so much. Moving to item 3, this is another topic for Mike. Discussion and possible action to award construction of the Martin Marina pipeline. Marlin, sorry, Marina Pipeline, you know, eyes and getting old, to the lowest responsive bidder, in addition to authorizing the award to completion for the installation of the linear portion of the project and professional services agreement with Ludo Scalamini for engineering services during construction. Can we get those smaller?
You can say
I can, but I like to make sure. I like to make sure that everyone understands what we're talking about. Okay, Mike, if you wouldn't mind.
Yes. So the water line traveling under the river from Marlin over to the marina has failed. And so in order to put it back in service, we will need a contractor to dig up both ends of the pipeline and cut the pipeline, open up both ends. And then we need another contractor to come in and install a liner. And that liner will be inserted inside the pipe. And they connected on both ends that the first contractor opened up, and then it'll be tested. Then that liner contractor will go away, and then the first contractor will come back and connect our water lines that they cut back onto the liner portion of the project, and then put the water line back in service. So the contractor doing that, what we're calling the general construction work of the excavation of the pits on both sides of the river, is WR4. They came in with the lowest bid on this project. And the liner contractor Originally, we did have this item on the board agenda a few months ago, but we came to realize that the company in situ form that had somehow we were led to believe that they were the only ones that could do this proprietary liner installation. But then we came to learn that there were actually other contractors that could do this work. And so they previously wanted $258,000. But after we went out to bid, two bids came in, the low bid, $92,000, and the second low bid, which was from that in situ form company, they came in at $188,000. So I have a summary here for you in the agenda packet on page 2 of the WR Ford contract, the Danny Reline contract, and then we need to amend Little Fiscalini's scope of work to provide engineering services during construction for construction management, submit a review, some inspection, things of that nature. And so we also are including 15% contingency for a total on this project of $471,000 and change. We do have in the budget, and this was a very good question that Director Graves had asked during the Water Committee meeting. Dina looked it up, and we do have $660,000 in the budget for this project. So that's a summary of what the scope is of this work. There's going to be two contractors and a consultant that are on the agenda tonight for the board to provide approval for.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And I know we had discussed this before, but does anybody have any clarifying questions at this point?
No, I just want to acknowledge the fact that I appreciate the efforts of Aaron and Mike Uraka in researching this further before we went down a road that would be obviously much more expensive. And I think it looks to me like we're saving money to the tune of about $200,000. So
awesome.
Great job on that, and I'm glad we were able to get that more competitively bid. And this is a project that's been sitting waiting to be done for at least 3 years, so we need to get it operated. Is that right, Aaron?
More, 2018.
Yeah, like I said, at least 3 years. maybe even six, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, and it came to, as Director Graves mentioned, to water, wastewater, we agreed it. WR Ford has done quite a bit of work for us already. They've done the pipeline project down off of Edgeview, and then also on Clipper.
Okay.
So.
Aaron, maybe you can just give a quick synopsis of why this is important for us to move forward on.
So, Discovery Bay is built with, I counted one time, I can't remember, but 55, 60 quarts. Those quarts are dead in water mains. And to help water stay moving, what they did is they put these underwater crossing mains that literally go under the delta to connect from one dead end port to another. And that's so you don't have stale water in the pipes, because like well water smells like sulfur. And so to keep that water flowing and keep it from aging and stinking, you have these underwater crossings. We have 11 of them. And since 2017-22, we've had two that failed. So you put these in place, and it also helps with fire flow protection. It keeps, in case you have to shut down other water mains, it keeps water coming in from the direction. That way, if we're doing repair work, we're not shutting off 200 homes or reducing pressure to 200 homes, or during high peak, lowering water flow to one particular town when there's a fire, the hydrants work. So that's why these underwater mains exist with the very strange layout of all the ports in this government.
So it's more than just an odor issue, it's actually a safety issue.
Correct. Yeah.
Great. Thank you for that.
In essence, our entire water system is a closed loop for that exact purpose, and it has to be balanced, and it has to flow as a closed loop. There's no dead ends. There's no pipe that goes and just stops. Everything's connected.
Awesome. Any public comment? Please.
So two have failed recently, and there's 9 more to go. So shouldn't we budget for this? That's sort of one thing that came upon. The other thing that came to mind was, what is the serviceable life of the lining versus actually replacing the pipe? Well, I don't know the difference in cost. I'm sure you guys have all done that. I just don't know.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay, any public comment online? No? I'm going to keep asking. Thank you. Okay, we'll close and bring it back to the board for possible action.
With staff recommendation.
Second.
Can I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Porter?
Aye.
Director Pateau?
Aye.
Director Graves?
Aye.
Vice President Brown?
Aye.
President Calvin?
Aye. Thank you so much. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Hamid.
All right, we will move to item number four, hearing regarding Ravenswood, lighting and open space assessment for fiscal year 24-25. And we have Margaret.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Good evening. I wanted to provide you an update here for Ravenswood. As you mentioned, we are to have a public hearing regarding the Ravenswood assessment that was brought to the board as part of the budget process. We did have some discussion earlier this year as it relates to the engineers report. We had it in draft form, presented that at the June meeting, and now we are here, like I said, for the public hearing. The engineer's report does indicate that we do have an increase on the assessment fee, going from $811.78 to $842.36. This allows us to pay for the operating costs and also the capital projects that we see going forward. One of those capital projects was recently approved by the board to move forward with the splash pad, and so this kind of assessment does help us to pay for things such as that project. Others that are on that also included in the 5-year budget. And so with that, we are here to, like I said, conduct the public hearing, and then if there for the board to take any of those comments, and from there to close the public hearing, and then for the board to consider the resolution that is attached as 2024-12. And that resolution reads, a resolution of the Board of Directors of the Town of Discovery Bay and Community Service District, California Community Service District, confirming the report and ordering the levy and collection of charges for the annual assessment for Ravenswood Improvement District assessment within the Town of Discovery Bay for the Community Service District for the fiscal year 2024 to 2025. So with that, I'll turn it back to you, President Callahan, to open for the public hearing.
Thank you. Legal, do we need to do anything to...
Just to follow... Our recommendation is to follow up with Moja, just to provide to open public hearing.
Okay.
Take any comment, close public hearing, take action.
Okay, well, we will open and open up for public comment. None here? Do you see any hands raised, Dina? No? Okay, with that, we'll close out public comment. And do we close the hearing at this point?
Yes, sir.
And then we will close the hearing and bring it to the board for recommendation.
Make a motion to follow staff's recommendation.
Second.
Can you get a roll call, please?
Director Porter?
Aye.
Director Pateau?
Aye.
Director Graves?
Aye.
Vice President Graham?
Aye.
President Callahan?
Aye. Thank you so much. All right, Margaret, we have another item for you. Discussion action to adopt resolution approving the amendment to the district financial policy.
Refer to GASB and GAAP, things that we already follow. and that part is actually already included within the financial reporting section that I'll get to next. But really wanted to emphasize that we have a banking cash management aspect. And then the most important thing here is that we wanted to update the authorized signers that the district has. So currently, as it stands, is that the board of directors, the general manager, the finance manager, and assistant general manager, when those positions are present, if you will, they're all on the signature card. Best practices are that, you know, that those duties sort of remain to the professional staff. It provides you protection, if you will, associated with that. And that the idea of updating that signature card would allow us to have some more efficiencies on district operations as it relates to some things that catch persons, which we'll get to in a new section as well. So that's the first one. Maybe I'll just pause, see if there's any questions, rather than trying to run through them all and see if there's anything else. So is there any questions relating to the authorized signer section?
Question on that?
Very good. I will continue on. The next one is a section on internal controls. We did have a section that talked about sort of the finance manager's duties. Really felt that the focus was should be really focused even on internal controls rather than a single person, but rather with the role of finance managers to ensure that there are solid internal controls in place where possible to do segregation of duties. All of this is to enhance the district's oversight, if you will, of the critical financial matters that they oversee. The following section is was renamed Section 6 to Financial Reporting. And this here, again, was just to sort of take in some of the existing things we do, but also have some additional required reporting that we're required to do, such as filing with the state of California, or because we have bonds, we have to file with the MSRB, which is a I forgot what it stands for. Rules making standards for, if I can't remember, but municipal. There it is. And so there's some other required reporting, and we wanted to make you aware of what we're doing, and so the public is aware of it as well. Number four, again, we expanded the section here, section seven relating to accounts payable. At present, but right now, the beginning disbursements that need to be made, they come to the board first for approval, and then they are, with your sort of approval through the consent item, that item is then, you know, given to back to staff to then run the reports or run the checks to then disperse them. However, again, following best practices, again, if we've already committed to do the service or receive the good, we are obligated to pay on those items, and this allows us to pay those vendors within the appropriate time, taking advantage of any discounts that's possible to us. So it allows us some additional time to be able to do you know, the appropriate oversight of those invoices to ensure that the goods have been received, that you know, the service has been delivered, and let's not have to like try to squeeze it in to make sure we get into an agenda. As part of that, though, even though that the rule would then be that we would have our sort of check runs ourselves, we would then report to you on a monthly basis. These are the disbursements that we have from the previous month. And so the idea is we'll provide some kind of similar report to what you see today that, like I said, is under your consent calendar. But the item here is to create some additional efficiencies relating to the district's disbursement. And then the final section here is just to refer to section 13, and it says accounting for fixed assets. There's a small section sort of makes reference to it there. Again, following best practices, there's a next board action item is to have a standalone sort of capitalization policy that goes into a little bit more description associated with it. And so that, I'll say, is the highlights, if you will, of the policy, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions on the board?
No, the Finance Committee did review this extensively with Margaret, and we certainly do appreciate her looking deep into our policies and making updates and adding internal controls as needed.
I concur.
Perfect. Any more discussion from the board before we open public comment? Is there any public comment on this topic?
I just have one thing. So, sort of one request, and I know Leonard also has asked for this, is that it's great that you're streamlining things and taking the board out of like requiring, you know, approvals for just regular routine invoices and stuff. That's great, all for it. But it would be helpful to have a little expanded information about, you know, what you know, it just has the name of a company and a, like, well, what was this for? We don't know what expense category was it. So that would be sort of like helpful for
Okay. Thank you. Bring it back to the board. Any further questions? Then we will open it up for a motion.
I'll make a motion to adopt resolution 2024-10, amending the financial policy 31.
I second.
Can we get roll call on that, please?
Director Porter?
Aye.
Director Couteau?
Aye.
Director Graves?
Aye.
Vice President Graham?
Aye.
President Callahan?
Aye. Thank you. And then our final item, discussion possible action to adopt resolution 2024-11. We have Margaret again.
Yes. One more for me. So this item for you today is, like I mentioned, the capitalization policy. So again, following best practices, obviously the government finance officers associations from other peer agencies, so my former agency, having more descriptive language around sort of what is, I mean, sort of defined as a capital asset, defining what is capitalized versus expensive. These are all sort of critical questions that, from an accounting perspective, make a difference of sort of where it shows up on your books. It's still cash out the door, but how we report them, how we treat them, does make a difference for us. The other thing we wanted to do was establish a threshold. Our current practice is, our policy does say $1,000. That is, fairly minor, and again, best practices are that at a minimum is $5,000. So I did raise the limit up there. So anything under $1,000, we would expense, and anything above $5,000 and has a useful life of 3 years or more would be capitalized. And so that is something that we would continue to use going forward. So when we're talking about the big projects and all that stuff, that's not what we're talking about here. It is the purchase of a laptop, it's the purchase of minor items, if you will. We would still be tracking them, we would just not have to record them and depreciate them over a useful life and depreciate for $2 a month or $2 a year for 10 years, something like that, which is actually in our records right now. The other thing it does describe around the impairment of capital assets and how we would handle them. They also talk about replacement and retirement. Those things are important because, again, as you heard, you know, there are some assets that we are looking to rehab, and so what are the rules around that? It's within the useful life, and you actually need to expense that item. However, if you are looking to rehab it and, you know, extend the useful life, then you can capitalize this thing. So again, very technical stuff from an accounting perspective, but it does make a difference of where it shows up on your financials. And then finally, the last item is on disposal and how you would handle those items. So with that, again, we put together a resolution, 2024-11. Again, there's no red line on this one because this is an entirely new policy. Again, this has been reviewed by District Council and was discussed at the Finance Committee on June 5th, who also recommended this for approval to the full board. And so with that, I'll pause there to see if you have any questions.
Do we have any questions from the board?
No.
No? Any public comment? No? Okay, we'll come back to the board.
I make a motion to adopt staff's recommendation.
Second.
Roll call on this one, please.
Director Porter?
Aye.
Director Couteau?
Aye.
Director Graves?
Aye.
Vice President Graham?
Aye.
President Callahan?
Aye. Thank you very much, Margaret.
You're welcome.
I see a line through manager report and general manager report.
Nothing.
Perfect. We have a director report. There's a special water wastewater meeting held today.
Yes, we basically approved everything we discussed. So it was the resolution for Well 5, awarding construction to the Maryland Marina Pipeline Project, and There was one that wasn't on this that will be coming to a future board meeting, is updating the O&M manual, the Stantec. O&M manual, did I say that correctly?
You did.
Which is a pretty extensive manual of how our system works with all of the new stuff done at our wastewater system. That needs to be updated.
Great, thank you.
That will be coming to a future report.
All right. I am seeing nothing for I to L. And with that, we will adjourn the meeting at 8:12. Thank you.